And the recording again has started, the recording has restarted at 10:03.
The next item on our agenda is an informal hearing for case number 2231, Gaurav Kanal, PT. I just want to make sure Mr. looks like, okay, so I see Mr. Kanal and his representative, Flynn Carey. You guys are here, you can hear us, okay?
Good morning, Dr. King, members of the board. This is Flynn Carey, and the licensee is present as well.
Thank you.
And I believe the complainant, original complainant, is also was present. Let me just double check. Ms. DeBow was on the call. Yep, she's on the call as well.
What are her initials?
She is the owner of a practice. Her name is Rose DeBow. She's not a patient.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah. All right. Thank you. And Ms. DeBow, can you confirm that you're on the call, please? Hello? If you're speaking, you're muted.
I wonder if she stepped away.
Okay. Well, we can come back to her. Let me know if you see anything change.
Okay.
So the first thing that we will do then is, Judy, you'll call roll, please.
Yes. Board members and staff, please state your position after your name is called. Dr. King.
Kelly King, board president.
Dr. Bustillo.
Karen Bustillo, board vice president, professional member.
Mr. Leone.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, board secretary.
Mr. Greer.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Mr. Barton.
Joshua Barton, public member.
Ms. Crowley.
Administrative services officer.
Ms. Richardson.
Mindy Richardson, board investigator.
Ms. Sinage.
Liz Sinish, board investigator.
And my name is Judy Chepius, executive director. Dr. King.
Great, thank you. And then Mr. Kanal has introduced himself as well as counsel, Mr. Flynn Carey. And then complainant, Ms. DeBow, did you make it on the call? Can you confirm you're on the in the meeting with us? Okay. So this interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions: issue a decree of censure, place restrictions on a licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring the completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds that the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious enough to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's state statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If, however, the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license or certificate, the board shall vote this matter to a formal hearing. Judy, can you please swear in the witnesses?
I can. Ms. Richardson and Dr. Kanal, please raise your right hand. Ms. DeBow, if you're on the call, raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, Mr. Kanal?
I do.
Ms. Richardson?
I do.
Ms. DeBow?
I do.
Thank you. Dr. King?
Great. Thank you. At this time, we will have Mindy Richardson, our board investigator, give us an overview of the complaint.
Thank you. Complaint 2231, Dr. Kanal's employer filed a complaint alleging that he created false records and billed two patients for a home care visit when he did not treat them. Additional investigation revealed that Dr. Kanal was working for two home health agencies concurrently. Based on interviews and documentation, the patient's therapeutic benefit from home health may have been compromised due to shortened visits. He was also providing oversight for PTA under general supervision who did not have the required prerequisite 2,000 hours. In the original investigative report, patients were cared for in a home health setting and billing occurred on a per-visit basis. Dr. Connell and his counsel received a copy of the draft investigative report and provided a supplemental written response, which was included in your materials as Exhibit 8. At your October meeting, you voted to move the case to an informal hearing and to include the additional medical record review of three records. The records were to document care after Dr. Connell had completed his continuing education, which he completed in September of 2022. The supplemental investigative report was included as Exhibit 12 in your materials, with associated medical records and interviews as Exhibits 13 through 15. The findings in the supplemental review confirm the findings in the investigative report, as well as identified an additional potential violation for the board to consider. One key difference in this review is that the care setting is mobile outpatient physical therapy, and as such, patients are billed on a CPT Medicare 8-minute rule. Medicare documentation regulations also apply. Dr. Connell and his counsel received a copy of the supplemental investigative report. In both home health and mobile outpatient therapy settings for this investigation, Dr. Connell was paid on a per-visit basis, regardless of the amount of time spent in direct care with the patient. Through his counsel, Dr. Connell attests that he has stopped practicing as a physical therapist, but would like to keep his license to practice PT. His current work status is unknown in terms of anything else he might be involved in terms of physical therapy practice. The potential violations cited in the investigative report and supplemental review include ARS 322044, engaging in a performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to deliberate or negligent act or failure to act regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 322044.13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed. ARS 322044.14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession. ARS 322044.6, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter and rules adopted pursuant to this chapter as it relates to R424303B.D. ARS 322044.12, failing to adhere to recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession as it relates to principle 7.1.B. A physical therapist shall never place his or her financial interest above the welfare of individuals under his or her care. ARS 322044.20, failing to maintain adequate patient records as it relates to R424303 patient care management and R424 adequate patient records. And finally, ARS 322044.22, providing treatment intervention unwarranted by the condition of the patient or treatment beyond the point of reasonable benefit. This matters for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Carey or Dr. Connell, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes, Dr. King, members of the board, I will make an opening statement, and then as per the procedure, Dr. Connell is open for any questions or discussion.
Thank you.
I think Mindy summed up the procedural posture that this was initially before you for an initial review, and then it came back this time for informal. The board staff did interview three new patients as a result of this, and I wanted to just draw the board's attention to the fact that the one patient claimed that her sessions were shorter, admitted that she couldn't remember basic details about the care despite it being within the last year, and also acknowledged that she wasn't paying attention to the clock. The second patient had dementia, but her daughter did indicate that the care was provided and that they both liked the licensee and thought that he was smart and appropriate. And then the third indicated that she actually experienced a 90% improvement in her mobility. Given her age and just general, end-of-life type issues, she was very successful in regards to the PT. So I think there's a lot of evidence here that his care was effective. I think at the end of the day, you really have a lot of the same information that you had before. One thing that you do have new is, as Mindy mentioned, the billing with the 8-minute rule. I don't think there's any credible evidence here that he wasn't there for the time that was stated. In addition, I would invite the board to ask Dr. Connell specifically about how he was instructed by the owners of that third mobile PT agency on how to bill and how to properly document. What I really want to be clear about here is what our intent is today. This is not a case where we're trying to justify or excuse his documentation. It was not up to the level the board expects. He fell short here on documentation. There was sloppiness and he was moving quickly. And I think it's important to note that our real focus here is the question of whether the documentation is indicative of a different type of issue, or if it really is a documentation issue, but for a provider who is providing care. It happens a lot in front of a lot of the boards, where when a practitioner's documentation falls short, it starts to raise the question of, you know, what care was provided. I see this a lot when we deal with doctors and NPs who have prescribing authority. What happens sometimes is they will make a very good clinical decision to use certain medications or use certain interventions, but because they failed to document it, you leave the board kind of scratching their head asking, why did this person, this licensee, do what they did? And I think the real culprit in this case is the breakdown in documentation. My hope is that you will determine that this is really a documentation, a negligence, and a newer licensing issue, as opposed to an intent to defraud. I think what's important here is the licensee has acknowledged the two errors related to patient PA and JM. Those were our initial patients. With that patient PA, this was the one where he showed up at the house, PA was not there, and he did some documentation. I think what's important about that one is he sent a text to his to the owner of the company and said very specifically, I think I screwed up on another chart, referring to PA. Now, the IR calls into the licensee's explanation about the error patently false, and this is based on this belief that the incorrect entry occurred while he was sitting at the house. In reality, he never made that statement, and he did indicate that he at some point he surmises that the reason that a bad entry got in there is he clicked on the submit instead of the save button. And this is consistent with the other provider that he worked for, who indicated to the board that the goal is to have the PTs do the visit and do the chart when they're in the home, but they can go home and do the notes. The passage of time between the PA no-show visit and finally revising the notes may explain why there was that delay. As for the other patient, there doesn't appear to be any dispute that someone was seen at the site, but there was an issue with did he see JM. Ultimately, what we're asking is for the board to conclude that there wasn't really fraudulent intent here. The two patients were caught before they were billed, one by the owner and one self-reported by the licensee. To our knowledge, no one was charged or billed for this error. I also think that there's terms being used here like forging a signature when Dr. Canal indicated that with the patient's permission and while in their presence, he would sign the little KBV signature. And he was informed by Ms. Richardson that that's not appropriate and it shouldn't occur. He ceased that procedure. He ceased that process. It was really an outgrowth of COVID. But to call that a forgery, I think, is a bridge too far. Finally, on the PTA supervision, one of the big issues on that one is that he did not personally verify whether the PTA had the 2,000 hours. You know, he wasn't hired to do that. And in fact, last month, as you were working to clear out PT and PTA cases from another agency that had some significant issues, there was some reflection on the fact that in larger organizations with a number of PTs, it is not necessarily the PT who's going to be doing that verification. Again, this isn't a case where Dr. Canal is expecting to leave here without any sort of concerns or any sort of issues or further actions for the board to take regarding him. What he's asking is really a consideration of where the culprit is here, and we think it's in documentation and some sloppiness as opposed to necessarily some kind of intent here to defraud. And so that's really what we're trying to set the stage for, as opposed to necessarily attempting to justify or excuse every line item and every item here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carey. Would Ms. DeBoe, would you like to make a statement to the board?
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to clarify I know that when we did have the conversation regarding the two patients, they came in at two separate times and they actually were the ones that, you know, reached out to us regarding them not being seen by physical therapy. And so by the time we were able to look into each one, they were about a week or so apart. And we found out that both of them were never seen and both of the visits were submitted with complete evaluations and signatures. So I just wanted to make sure you guys were aware that I did have to reach out to Dr. Kanal to ask him what happened with these situations. And then that's when he ended up letting us know that maybe there was a mistake.
Thank you. Are you open to answering questions from the board as well?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Board members, what questions do you have for either Dr. Kanal or Ms. DeBoe?
Dr. Kanal, this is Joshua Greer. Can you tell me what happened with both of the patients that we have records for that you, I think you concede now that you never saw them, correct?
Correct.
So what happened there?
So with PA, I gave him a call in the morning, got voicemail. Typically what I'll do when I get voicemail, let them know that I'm going to be there during a certain amount of time, certain time. And so I went to his place, rang the doorbell, you know, knocked on the door, called him several times, which is shown by the phone logs that you guys have. And then, you know, according to the work logs, I saved the visit. I was, you know, looked at it the next day or the day after. I don't remember exactly when, but it's on the work logs. And then when I was, you know, reviewing everything, I hit submit instead of save. The buttons are really close to each other. And, you know, I know Rose was busy during that time. I did try to reach out to her for that and other things, but it wasn't until she reached out to me for Juanita Medina that I was, I was able to tell her about it. And then with JM, what happened was I went to the house, you know, I was greeted by a woman.
Let's stay with PA. Okay. So how do we have a completed record that got submitted if you never saw PA?
So when I was, like I said, when I was reviewing the note, the following day I hit submit on there instead of save.
I get that part. I understand that part. But why was there anything to submit? Why was there any note at all if you hadn't seen PA?
Correct. So I pre-filled the notes with stuff from the SO, the starter care. I always did that with patients, is I pre-filled their notes and had it ready to go. So that way when I went in there, it was more efficient for me. And so that's why there was stuff in there to submit.
And what stuff would you pre-fill in?
You know, I would pre-fill in basically part of the subjective. I had templates that would copy to like for the assessment part, which I could just change at the time of the visit, the little details. I would have basically the manual muscle test pre-filled in pretty much most of the visit, and I would just change in the stuff that was that I found different from what the nurse found different or that was different from my templates that I had.
Do you understand how that could be concerning to us as a board?
Absolutely. You know, I didn't at the time. I just thought it was a way to be more efficient. But now after this whole process, I've definitely realized how that could be a huge concern to the board.
Do we have a signature for PA's, for the visit for PA?
We do, yes.
Yes.
How did we get a signature for PA if you never treated PA?
So I signed the signature, and that's what I would do for patients, and I would let them know, hey, I went ahead and did the signature for you, and I would be doing that going forward, because when I went into the practice of, like, when I started being a PT, I started in home health, and it was right in the, like, beginning, it was, like, in COVID, during COVID, so the, you know, first couple places I worked for, that's what the PTs were doing. I shadowed one PT, that was my entire training in home health, was I shadowed one PT for a day, and that's what they did. And then after that, that's a practice that I carried on, and it became a habit.
When did you sign this for PA?
I believe I signed it that time when I was at the house.
Is that part of your pre-filling out? You pre-fill out the signature as well?
When I get to the house, I'll fill out the signature, or before I leave, I'll fill out the signature. And I left it like that because I was planning on seeing him at the end of the week. I believe it was a Monday when I saw him. So, you know, with that, like, if you don't, you have till the end of the week, or you have to mark it as a missed visit, which means they lose that visit. So my plan was to see him by the end of the week. And then, so that's why I had done that. So I had most of the stuff done. And when I went in there, I just had to do the visit part with him.
And this was in July of 2022. Is that the date we're talking about?
Yes.
And we have a check mark, patient identity confirmed. You obviously didn't confirm the patient identity because you didn't meet him, correct?
Correct.
That was something that you pre-filled out?
Correct.
You pre-filled out the time in and time out?
I did pre-fill that out, and I don't remember if I changed it, because I pre-filled that out like based on what time I'm going to be going over there. But when I go over there, if it's different, I'll change it. But I don't remember if I changed that or not, to be honest with you.
Okay. Right, let's talk about JM then.
Okay.
What happened with that? And wait, before we move on, you did not report PA to your employer at the time that this happened, correct?
So after the PA thing happened, I had been trying to get a hold of Rose for that and other things. And by the time she got a hold of me, that's when she brought up Juanita Medina.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, JM. That's when she brought up JM. And so when she brought up JM on the phone, I had told her about that. And I also had sent her a text saying that I had messed up on another patient. And I think it was
But that was a month later, correct?
No.
JM, you saw, JM, was that the same week?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. What happened with JM?
So what happened with JM was that I went over there and I was greeted by somebody. Obviously now I know that it wasn't JM. She exhibited signs and symptoms similar to a UTI, which is what JM had. So I went and did the evaluation with that person.
And so when it says on the record that you confirmed the patient's identity, what did you do to confirm the identity of the patient?
I just said, hey, I'm Dr. Kanal. I'm a doctor of physical therapy. I'm here to see JM, and they let me in. And, I mean, that's basically what I did. I didn't check ID or anything like that. But then, but now I check ID.
Ever
since then, I started checking ID.
And I'm not trying to be antagonistic, but this is going to come across a little antagonistic. Why would you check the check mark patient ID confirmed when you didn't confirm the patient's ID?
I mean, that's what I had always done. That's when I said, hey, I'm here for this person, I assumed, which was wrong of me to assume that, you know, if they let me in and they said, like, yeah, like, I would think that if you go to someone's house and you're like, hey, I'm here for this person, if it's not that person, they would be like, you're at the wrong house, or this person's not here, or say something like that to me that would let me know. So when they let me in, I just kind of assumed that that was the person. And I mean, now I realize, like, I should be a little bit more strict on that and being like, okay, well, can I just check your ID to verify it? I didn't do it at the time. That's
So the blood pressure, did you actually take the blood pressure for the person you saw?
Yes, I did.
I have a note here. Patient lives in a one-story home with daughter and son. Is that JM or is that the person you saw?
I believe that's JM because I probably got that information. I'm thinking I got that information from the SOC before I went there. But like I said, I don't remember to that detail, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the clinical statement on your note. Is that from JM or is that for the person that you saw when you thought you were treating JM?
Just to clarify, is that under the assessment part that you're looking at? Yeah, so that will be pre-filled in there, and then I'll change usually stuff to match the individual. And I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that it would be for that person that I saw thinking that it was JM.
Okay.
Based off of how they presented in the evaluation. But it could also be mixed from some of the stuff from the SOC that I got for JM.
How long after your visit with JM did you report these issues to your employer?
Give me just a moment. Let me look at that. I think there's I'm looking. Give me just a moment. Flynn said that you would find the entire text chain if you want to ask me stuff.
Oh, I just want to know what your memory is. What do you remember? Was this the same day? Was this a week later?
I think it was a day later.
Okay.
I believe I spoke with her a day after JM, and it was like maybe a day or like 2 days after PA, because I believe JM was either a day or 2 days after PA.
Okay. Going back to PA, how do you have a blood pressure and heart rate for PA?
So I just would pre-fill that information because when I started home health, I was using a lot of different systems, Kinzer, Access, and a few other different documentation systems. And some of the systems require you to pre-fill information to save the note. And that's the habit that I had. So I was pre-filling a bunch of stuff before I was going to any of the patients.
Some things I understand that you might want to pre-fill because they're probably not going to change, but I'm assuming the blood pressure is going to change every single time. So why would you pre-fill a blood pressure, a heart rate, respirations, an O2 stat?
Correct. Yeah. So it was out of habit because I was doing it since I started, because I know in some of the systems that I used, you had to pre-fill certain information to be able to save the note. I don't know if that's the case with Kinzer, but because it was like that in one of the systems, I just made it a habit across all of them because, that would make it efficient. But that's what I learned, is that trying to take those little shortcuts to save time is definitely not worth it. After this whole experience, it's really, really been very clear to me.
Were you working with two separate employers at the time?
Yes.
How many patients were you seeing on a daily basis between your two employers?
I want to say somewhere between 5 and 8, depending on the day.
And you were only paid if you actually saw the patients, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I don't have any other questions at this time.
I have a few questions for you. Back to PA, this was your initial evaluation, is that correct?
Correct.
And so you wouldn't have been able to ask his permission to sign the chart ahead of time because you never actually saw him and you hadn't seen him prior. So there was no conversation before signing his initials or name on his chart, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And vital signs. You pre-filled all your patients' vital signs before you saw them? That was your habit?
Correct, yes.
Okay. What are you doing now? Where are you working?
So I'm not currently working in physical therapy right now.
What are you doing?
I'm doing things that are outside of physical therapy.
Can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, so I have an Etsy store that I'm currently running. I have a few other, businesses. I'm in real estate, and I have a caregiving agency as well.
Can Can you tell me about your caregiving agency?
Yeah, so we hire caregivers to be able to take care of people in their homes and, elderly individuals in their homes. And then I'm also, that's what we do for that agency. And then one other thing that I'm doing is I'm in the process of starting a assisted living facility as well.
So you're starting your own assisted living facility. A group home?
Basically a residential assisted living facility.
Okay, a group home. Do your caregivers, are any of them therapists that you're, or PTAs that you're, or techs that you're overseeing as a physical therapist?
Nope, there are no physical therapy services being rendered in the stuff that I'm currently doing right now.
Is your intention to provide physical therapy to the patients who are living in your group home?
No, they'll get physical therapy through like a agency, through their insurance and stuff like that. I wouldn't be providing it.
And so just to clarify, you're not practicing as a physical therapist at all right now, not supervising anyone, not providing care for anyone, not working in any way, shape, or form as a PT?
That's correct. And like the reason for that is after that interview with Mindy, like after the initial incident, I just thought, hey, you know, the error was like me paying like more attention, not pre-filling and doing, you know, those things. But after talking to Mindy in the interview, I believe it was in like June or July, like beginning July, end of June, something like that. That's when Mindy kind of shed light and she was like, hey, this is like not up to practice standards. So I tried looking up stuff online and there's like, I really couldn't find like a specific practice standard for home health. And so I felt like I was confident until this point, but I felt like I don't even really know what I'm doing. And so, I mean, that's what I wanted to kind of, I figured from all of this and, you know, talking to you guys and stuff, I'd have a better grasp on where my weaknesses are, where I fell short, and to be able to put a plan to get better at that. And then only then, like, return to PT because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing anything wrong anymore.
Well, Dr. Kanal, you know, we requested 3 more charts, and I'm really glad we did because I think it gives us better insight into some really significant gaps in your understanding of documentation and providing care for as a physical therapist. And so I just want to ask you a few questions about it. If you're planning to return to PT practice, I think there's a lot of opportunity for you. Talk to me a little bit about a patient. She was 92 years old. I'll have to look up her initials. You had her on service for a total of over 210 visits. She was 92. Her treating diagnosis was vertigo, paroxysmal, right? Benign, paroxysmal, vestibular issues. But you're treating her hip and her knee. You saw her twice a week. And you kept her on service for over 200 visits. Can you just help me understand your thought process? Because I didn't see any progress after like the third month, but she was on for over almost 2 years. So can you just talk me through that and your thought process on that, please?
Yeah. So, and Dr. King, just so you have it, it's F as in Foxtrot, S as in Sam is the
thank
one
you.
You're sure. It's exhibit 15F. I'm sorry. Exhibit 15 for the.
Thank you. Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Carey.
Yeah, so when I was treating her, she had gotten out of a nursing facility and she wasn't really able to do anything at all, get up, do, like, she didn't have very low function. So that's what I was treating. I know her medical diagnosis was that, but like her PT diagnosis was, you know, she wasn't able to, she had balance deficits. She had a lot of things like that. I did do some vertigo exercises with her, some cervical stuff with her as well, but she had, a lot of deficits in her lower body, her strength, her endurance, her gait and things like that. So I was doing a lot of that stuff with her because her PT goals were to be able to, you know, return to performing the things that she liked doing, which were like activities. And she lived like a big community center, like independent living / I think it was like a skilled nurse. I don't think it was skilled nursing, but it was something like that, like an independent living facility. And so there was like activities during the day and she wanted to be able to attend those. So I would just, you know, do exercises and do things like that to attend it. And then at the time, the office manager for A&B Mobile Therapy, which I think is no longer there, she had told me that this particular patient had like unlimited visits with insurance and could do maintenance therapy with her. So once you got her to a certain point, maintenance therapy was allowed by her insurance. So that's why I was seeing her like 3 times a week, because she had it and she wanted to do it. She wanted to get better. She was motivated and I was making progress with her. So that's why I kept seeing her.
I appreciate that you were told that by your employer. I'm just curious, your documentation does not support anything you're saying around progress. The objective measures aren't there. You mentioned several times she's making progress, but I read through the whole, almost 200, whatever I had, 200 sessions with her, with you. And you said she was in a group home. Was there anyone else you could have trained? She needed 68 minutes exactly of therapy every single session you saw her. Well, so I'm just having a hard time putting those pieces together. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, so I mean, she was a bit of a little bit of a slower learner, and she had some memory deficits. So I'd have to remind her, and a lot of time was taken doing that. And you know, I was, you know, treating her. I mean, basically those 68 minutes, I did the time and the stuff that I built for. That's what I did. I could have documented it better. I know my documentation felt short when I looked at that. I saw the lack of objective findings and all those things that you mentioned. But my intent was to get her better, and under my knowledge, it was, you know, she was able to do those visits and insurance, but, you know, basically covered it. So that's why I did it.
So let me just ask you a question. Do you base your justification for continuing therapy on the fact that insurance will pay for it, or based on the patient's progress and meeting your goals and transitioning them out of physical therapy because they no longer need you?
Well, I mean, I base it off of their need and their progress, which she was continually like progressing. She wasn't able to even get out of bed. And by the time I was, you know, finished treating her, she was able to get out of bed, walk down the stairs, attend activities, you know, very close to independently. And so I do it off that. But of course, you have to look at insurance and see what the limitations are. I mean, if insurance wouldn't allow those many visits, I'm not able to do it, even if the patient did need it. So I would say it's a little bit of both, because you're limited by the insurance, but you're also, you want to do what's best for the patient. That's primary, of course. But she was getting better. I just didn't document it properly.
Mm-mm. I didn't see any tests of range of motion or strength, but yet you document lower extremity weakness. You know, there's just no objective information in here to support seeing her for 2+ years. Okay. And she was never, none of your sessions were ever shortened. She didn't like tire out after a while. They were all exactly 68 minutes.
I mean, there were some times when I stayed longer and I marked 68 minutes. You know, there were some times when, you know, I would want to stay longer with her and she would want to, you know, just keep it to 68 minutes because she had other stuff to do. But yeah, they were all at least 68 minutes.
Can you tell me a little bit about what manual therapy you did with her? Because it looks like she was frequently billed 2 units of manual therapy almost every session.
Yeah, so I did with her, I worked on her neck a lot. So I did, like, I had her on her back. I was doing soft tissue massage on her neck. I did some traction, which made her help. Like, she would have headaches, so the traction helped her headaches a little bit better. When she had her knees and hips were hurt, so I would do some transverse friction on her hips and knee, the areas that hurt, to make her feel better. And then we would, you know, be able to continue to do exercises.
If I was going to cover her for you, let's say you're out next week and you need coverage, how would I know any of that? How would I know anything you did with her?
That's a good question. I mean, I know that I definitely felt short in that area of documentation and making it specific enough. Like I was looking at the documentation and my documentation was more generic of what I was doing. And when I, like, you know, after this experience, I know that I could have been a lot more specific, so that if another therapist did come to substitute for me, they would know exactly where I left off to know, like, where to take off from that.
Okay. I have no more questions. Thank you.
This is Karen Bustillo. I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. and ask you about what your relationship was with your PTAs and how you would talk with them about their visits with your patients.
Yeah, so I mean, I would, so at least for home sweet home care with Rose, you know, I had the PTA, I was doing evals, so I would do the eval and it would be sent to the PTA that I was supervising, and I'd, you know, with her, when I first spoke with her, she seemed like she was very competent, she was confident, and, you know, I talked to her about a few evals. And then I let her know, hey, you know, if you have any questions, concerns from my evals or anything like that, you can reach out to me. I mean, because we're in the field, you know, driving and everything like that. So I told her I'm here by phone. As soon as I'm done with the patient, I can talk to you about anything or help you out with anything. So that's kind of what I would do with the PTAs.
Let me see.
And then during supervisory visits, I'd also talk to the patients too, to see how they felt like the PTA was doing, and if there's any concerns that they brought up, then I would try to address it with the PTA and say, hey, this person's saying this, try to figure out what the story was and try to come up with a resolution for them.
Okay, thank you.
I have just a quick question. So you had mentioned earlier that I believe maybe it was Mr. Carey who had mentioned it in his opening statement, but that it was up to the organization to determine the number of hours that a PTA has. Is that your mindset on whose responsibility it is to determine the number of hours?
Well, you know, I thought that because my role wasn't in HR, that when the individual gets hired, I thought that they would meet the minimum requirements in order to be able to go into that role. You know, I was working as a per diem employee for these agencies, and so I mean, maybe I was mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that, you know, if when someone's like, hey, this is your PTA, like, it's my job to judge their skill set as a PTA, and when I spoke with this individual, she sounded like she knew exactly what she was doing, and I think she did, you know, and the conversation led me to believe that she knew what she was doing, she was competent, and so I didn't think twice about checking her, like, certifications or anything like that.
Yeah, no, definitely something that to keep in mind, that is your responsibility as a PT, to make that determination of whether they're competent, but also that they have the number of hours that are required under general supervision. Otherwise, you've got to make that call that they can't treat that patient.
I got you. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Any other questions for either Dr. Connell or Ms. DeBoe? Okay. Dr. Connell, would you like to make a closing statement?
At this time, you know, I just want to, you know, thank you guys for taking your time and effort on hearing me out. And I really feel like this whole investigative process has been beneficial for me, because it's really shed light on my areas of improvement, my weaknesses, basically areas of opportunity that I can use to become a better PT and a more well-rounded PT. You know, I do believe that my actual practice of PT, I'm pretty good at getting people better, but now I realize how important it is to document, to prevent any other further issues from coming out, and just to have a complete, you know, record for other physical therapists or other practitioners to be able to take off from where I left off. So I really appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity.
Thank you. Ms. DeBoe, would you like to make a closing statement?
I don't think I have, you know, anything further to say. I think we all understand that the main concern for me is, you know, patient care. If, you know, assessments are said that they're done and then they're not, They are out of the hospital, and now it's been a week, 2 weeks, where we think that they've had their evaluations, but then they call the office and they're not done. And you know, it's on us as an agency to figure out why. And then now we need to rush and get them the care that they should have received, you know, in the beginning.
Yes. I understand. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Okay, at this time then the board will move into deliberations. We ask that you just respect our time to be able to discuss the case. All right, we have 5 allegations to consider. Any concerns at all about any of them not being substantiated?
Dr. King, on the 5th allegation, are you talking about on the supplemental report, the additional potential violation? 32, 20, 44, 22?
Yes. So I guess that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's actually 6 then. Is that what you're seeing? I have 32, 20, 44, 4, engaging in substandard care. 32, 20, 44, 13.
Okay.
20, 44, 14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, fraudulent representations. Do you have it?
Well, I'm just looking at the supplemental report. That's not okay. The supplemental investigative report.
Okay. Mindy, maybe you can help me.
Mindy, you're muted.
I apologize if it's a little confusing, but when I did my briefing, I took all of the potential violations that were in the initial investigative report plus the supplemental and reported on all of them. So I have actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that I cited.
Okay. So then do you have 20, 44, 12?
I have 20, 44, 4, 13, 14. And then 20, 44, 6, 12, 20, and 22.
Okay.
And then there were some ethical principles and rules related that supported those.
And licensee received notice of all these, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So I guess I'll kind of start off our discussion. I'm not convinced by the explanations that we're hearing, and frankly, I'm not a big believer in coincidence, and it seems to me that if this happens once, that's one thing, but we've got, looks like everywhere we turn, we're finding more examples and stuff that just looks fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I'm glad that we're, as physical therapists, we have the ability, you know, the therapists have the ability to go help people, and great, but like, 2 years of therapy on a 90-something year old woman who doesn't appear to be making significant progress is concerning. These 2 visits with PA and JM, I just find it absolutely unbelievable that things as specific as a blood pressure would be pre-filled in for any reason. Even on a returning visit, much less on an initial visit where you have no idea what the baseline would be. And so I don't find the kind of idea that this is just preparation work that got accidentally submitted super compelling. And so I think this rises in my mind to the level of the disciplinary action at least.
I concur, Mr. Barton. I really struggle with some of it. I could see, hey, we're just trying to be efficient, but the fact that not only are we trying to be efficient, but we're pre-signing for the patients. especially a patient that we've never seen before and don't have a relationship and don't have the expectation that they're going to allow us to pre-sign for them is incredibly troubling. And I don't think there's another reasonable explanation for it except for he's trying to get paid. I understand the frustration. He shows up. He had a confirmed appointment and the patient wasn't there. And he thinks he should be compensated, and so he submits the note. That's, I think, the only reasonable explanation for it. The other explanation just doesn't seem reasonable to me.
I mean, I concur with both of you. It's just, I'm just baffled at any professional licensed physical therapist would ever think it's okay to sign a patient's chart with their name, to pre-fill things such as vitals, to submit documentation on a patient you actually never saw. I do a lot of work with home health agencies on auditing documentation, and this is egregious. Egregious. It's not just sloppy. It is, for me, taking significant advantage of a very vulnerable population. Keeping a patient on because their insurance would pay for it is elder abuse. It's terrible. There's no justification in any of his documentation to keep this patient on service. The treating diagnosis doesn't even match what he's working on. There's no objective data. The fact that he saw her exactly 68 minutes every single time makes no sense to me for a patient who's 92 years old, with endurance and balance issues that he talked about. I think I'm so glad we asked for more charts. I think that this is, and he's opening a potentially group home for elderly, and I'm just very, very concerned about this person, providing care for the elderly. For me, all of the allegations have been well substantiated.
For me, they're just, I think the overall theme here is there's just a lack of attention to detail in regard to anything that's happening within this practice. I mean, I think it starts with the fact that he did an entire evaluation on a patient that wasn't even the patient. And then, I mean, you can see how that kind of proceeds into his documentation. It proceeds into supervision of PTAs, just the way that he's managing his caseload. So yeah, it's extremely concerning.
Yeah. And Giovanni, I agree, you know, lack of attention to detail, you know, but one of the allegations is placing his own financial interests above the welfare of the patients. I think that's easily well substantiated.
Yeah.
I think he was going to document and bill for every single patient. I'd be interested to hear from the employer how many missed visits he actually had, if there were any. So this one's really got me.
And I agree.
Public, it's got me for sure.
And I think, you know, my concern is it's not the inattention to detail is bad enough, but frankly, I think there's more here, right? I think there's significant evidence. I mean, I kind of was thinking about this before we started this meeting, and like, if I was to try to make up a way to come up to fraudulently bill for therapy that wasn't occurring, I don't know that I would do anything different. Mm-hmm. And you know, the question that kind of raises to my mind is like, the number of coincidences I have to accept is true to get to this is just a series of unfortunate events where we happen to bill for therapy for patients who we never saw, who we, in one case, we didn't even, you know, I mean, it sounds like in one case he entered somebody's house and began doing therapy on someone without even recognizing who the person was. I mean, it just seems so beyond the pale. I think the only explanation is that this is a This was done for financial motive, which is done to get bills done. And that, you know, I agree. That's a huge concern. And, you know, it's, I think it's squarely enough to resolve it. So.
Karen, what are your thoughts?
I agree with everything that people are talking about with this. Home health just, again, happens to be a situation where every person seen in the home health situation is vulnerable. They're in their own homes. They're being seen by strangers, at least initially. And I can just relate a story of my own experience of doing home health and going into some people's homes for the first time, and the patient's saying, well, I'll sign your chart and then you can leave, because that's what all the other previous PTs did. And I'm like, no, we don't leave. We do exercise. That's why we're here. Mm-hmm. And when I hear Dr. Canal say that, you know, he shadowed somebody who kind of taught him how to do some of his documentation, it just shows me that, again, it's our system is very broken. He was caught, thank goodness. And it's very pervasive out there. It's very very troubling as a provider, as well as a citizen who, you know, you know, may have a family member that is in need of these services. So I really feel that every allegation is substantiated by the investigations that have been done. And I, too, am concerned that he's going to open his own assisted living group home.
Okay. Do we feel this rises to the level of revocation or consent agreement to surrender his license?
I guess that was the question that I was almost afraid to ask him, is if he intended to keep his license.
We can ask him that.
Well, I think, I think the intention that I got from the very beginning of the discussion was that, while there's not a plan to practice, I think the intention is to maintain the license. And, you know, look, I'm always super loath to move in the direction of suspension and revocation, but it does concern me. Mm-hmm. Especially since he's still going to stay in the healthcare field. I've worked enough with these healthcare industries to know that even if it's not providing physical therapy, you know, it gets advertised in bios and discussions about the assisted living facility, and people rely on that. And I think that's concerning from our perspective. Now, I don't know that that's actionable, right? I don't know that we can say, I mean, maybe we can, but I don't think we can say, well, you're going to be advertising yourself as a physical therapist, even though you're not providing physical therapy. So we're going to come down harder on you. But I do think it is a concern that we need to be aware of. And, you know, this is not a situation in my mind, given the fact that he's still going to be in the healthcare industry, given the fact he's still going to be working among an elderly population, given the fact that he's still going to be working among a population that needs physical therapy, even if he's not the one providing it, I think that in my mind, that does weigh more heavily in favor of an action like suspension, mm-hmm. at least. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that there's a decent chance that this continues on.
Okay. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I am, on that. I'm always loath to move into suspension revocation discussion, but sure. I just can't imagine a scenario. I have tried and tried and tried to come up with an explanation of this that is not just billing fraud, and I can't come up with one.
Mm-mm.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, I think the concerns are valid. There's a lot of things someone can do with a PT license that doesn't involve actual direct patient care, but could continue to involve fraud and defrauding, particularly geriatrics and vulnerable populations. There's not a lot of oversight for therapy services in home health or assisted living facilities. So, and I didn't hear, he didn't own any of it. He just said, you know, there was a mistake. It was my employer told me to do it this way. This is how I was shadowed to do it. He's not owning any of it. So for me, I'm leaning toward either suspension or a consent agreement to surrender his license.
Is that a motion?
I'm going to make a motion that we offer Dr. Kanal a consent agreement to surrender his license, and if not signed, we move to a formal hearing.
Second.
Madam Chair, members of the board.
Oh, findings of facts, conclusions of law.
Thank you.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm sorry. I'm going to back up. My first motion is that we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law, all of them outlined in the investigative and supplemental reports.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, let's call the vote, please.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt all of the allegations and potential violations as set forth in the investigative report as findings of fact and conclusions of law, which include ARS 32-2044-4, ARS 32-2044-13, ARS 32-2044-14, ARS 32-2044-6, ARS 32-2044-12, ARS 32-2044-20, and ARS 32-2044-22. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. I think we had a motion and a second. I can restate it. Make a motion to offer the licensee a consent agreement to surrender his license, and if not signed, we move to a formal hearing.
Can we add some continuing education with this? I would really like to see him take like the Pro B ethics course or something of that caliber.
I think the problem is once he surrenders, we wouldn't have jurisdiction anymore.
That is correct. Yeah.
We could make a recommendation.
Or if he reinstates, could the board review it at that time if he decides to reinstate?
I don't believe that he would be eligible for reinstatement. I think he would have to submit a new application for licensure based upon the revocation.
Okay.
And certainly at that time, the board could consider if he meets the minimum qualifications and what may be appropriate, in considering whether or not that he's eligible for licensure.
Do we need to state that, or is that just something we would know? Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that if, if we do move to a formal hearing and we're going to discuss something like suspension, which I would certainly be open to, then I think it may be worth having that discussion, but I think it may be premature now.
Okay.
Who did the second on this one?
Josh Greer.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
Okay, hearing none, then let's take a vote.
In case 2231, Gaurav Kanal PT, it has been moved and seconded to offer a consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of his license. If the consent agreement is not signed, the matter will be remanded to a formal hearing and include all of the potential violations as set forth in the investigative and supplemental reports. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. And before we walk away, I just want to throw out there a thought that I had as I was reading through all of this. And I know that we have done it in the past, but I would like to suggest that we report Dr. Kanal to the OIG for potential for Medicare fraud. So I can make a motion and we can discuss it. I move that we report Dr. Kanal to, I want to say that I only know it by the initials. So the OIG, Office of...
Office Inspector General.
Thank you. For Medicare fraud.
Second.
Okay, discussion.
I guess my only question is kind of history. Have we done this in the past? I think we have, but it's been a long, long time since I've...
It's been a long time since we've seen something this egregious, honestly. We have done it in the past, and Mindy, I just want to confirm that particularly the patient we talked about with 200 plus visits was all Medicare?
It was a railroad Medicare, but it was Medicare.
Okay. Yes, good question, Mr. Barton. We have done this in the past, not frequently, but very seldom does it rise to this level. This is 900 plus units billed to Medicare only on this one patient.
Yeah, no, I it's very concerning. So I'm leaning in favor. I just wanted to make sure we're consistent in it.
Yes, thank you. Always appreciate that. Mr. Greer, do you have any thoughts?
No.
Okay. They may investigate and find no fraud, but I think it's on us to make sure that we report if we are concerned about it or suspect it. I think that's our due diligence. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Judy, when you're ready, call a vote.
It's been moved and seconded to report Mr. Kanal to the Office of Inspector General regarding Medicare fraud. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Sorry, yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, thank you. All right, then that closes this informal hearing. Dr. Kanal, the board staff, and Mr. Terry, the board staff, will be in touch with you for next steps.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I know we have an 11 o'clock. Just quick question, can we take a 5-minute break, or do we need to keep moving since we're a little behind on the 11 o'clock informal hearing?
No, you can take a break if that's what you'd like.
Okay. If it's okay with everyone, could we just take a brief, what Josh calls a comfort break, get some water, stretch your legs, and we'll be back here, let's say 10 minutes, so 11:22.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting recording will stop at 11:12.